talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marian way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange. Read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. It's on today, the Exchange Club.
Hey, Scott Spears along with you here. Getaway Friday, November the 20th, 2020, 18 minutes past the hour, 11:20, 2020. That's the date today. And as many of you know, this is a true Getaway Friday as we're heading into the big holiday season. 6 days from now, Thanksgiving Day. How about that? This is the last Exchange Club before the big holiday. Of course, I'll be on next week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and back with you next Friday, although we will be taking off the Thanksgiving holiday. So that's the way it goes. Now, as many of you do at holiday time, this year a little trickier than others because of the pandemic, you like to get together with family. And this year, we will be doing that in a lot of interesting ways. Zoom, telephone calls, 6 feet apart, maybe at your house. A lot of interesting things are going to be going on over this Turkey Day 2020. Well, in relation to that, I want to do the same thing with guests on this program. I want to have people on who feel like family as we go into the big holiday. So our guest today, who lives on a completely different coast than we do, got up early this morning. I can't thank him enough for that. He has been coming on with now with me periodically for probably pretty close to 2 decades. How about that? And we're still having fun, I think. He has been in the journalism game for many, many years, and you probably remember him best for his more than 30-year stint on HBO Boxing. What a show it was. He worked with Muhammad Ali and George Foreman and Mike Tyson and, of course, our favorite Buster Douglas here in Ohio. What a slate it was. Floyd Mayweather, he's talked to them all. The legendary, my pal, Larry Merchant. Larry, good morning where you are.
Good afternoon where you are.
Larry, I was thinking about this. It's not even mentioned on your Wikipedia page. First job in journalism, what year?
Well, if I discount my stint as editor of the school paper at the University of Oklahoma and a few minor jobs here and there, I would say my first job was Stars and Stripes. I was in the Army after I got out of college, and after I spent a year primarily in Georgia, incidentally, learning how to be a high-speed radio operator. I was sent to Germany, and I got myself transferred to Stars and Stripes, where I spent about a year as a reporter and editor.
Learning this business in that way, what was that like?
Well, it was an interesting experience for me. I was in my early 20s, and I had a car at my disposal to go to various camps and cover some events. What I remember most vividly is that we had a plan, I believe, where we worked 10 or 11 days and then took off 3 or 4 days. And when I took off those days, I jumped in a car and drove to Paris or the Netherlands, took a train down to Bavaria in Austria, took a trip to London and the Riviera and Rome. So I really suffered for my art.
I, of course, we're talking about World War II here. What story sticks out?
No, this is a little after World War II, but I have vivid recollections of World War II, but this was about the time of the Korean War.
Korean War. What is your most vivid story from that time period, the Korean War?
I'm not sure. My head turns. There was a kid around the corner. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He was an interesting character who went to Korea, actually, and was shot by a sniper and died. That stands out. I had strong feelings when I was around in Germany where even though it was 5, 6 years, 7 years after the end of World War II, there were still bombed out towns and parts of big cities like Frankfurt where I was near. And it had a vivid impact on me seeing what war had been like.
What is it like to cover an active war? A lot of people aren't allowed to do this anymore. Do you think it was a good idea to have journalists there?
To cover an active war? I'm sorry.
What police action, I guess they called Korea?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't in Korea, but it's part of our tradition that and the military do read the Stars and Stripes. There was a famous war correspondent in World War II named Ernie Pyle, who I believe had an influence on journalism because he was the kind of guy who went into the foxholes and found personal stories with GIs. I never saw action, so I can't really pair myself with those guys. But it was a great tradition. Another tradition that our president apparently was trying to break because it's a government-sponsored newspaper, but it has always had the freedom to call them as we saw it.
Have you been surprised being a member of journalism for more than a half century, how the public, a percentage, not all, but a certain percentage, turned on the media in the last 10 years, but more specifically the last 4 years?
I guess I am. I never thought I'd have a president who attacked the media and try to undermine its credibility as part of his grand plan. And in dividing the country, and so people watch the shows that they agree with and read the newspapers they agree with on both sides. And maybe that's always gone on, but it's a dangerous practice when it's brought to the heights that Trump did in trying to make the government all about him. And so that anything that was negative about him was some kind of a grand master plan to dethrone him.
Election night 2020 was a very unique night. We obviously did not know the results till a few days later. A winner was not projected in the presidential election. When you're watching the results come in on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, what are you thinking?
Well, I was curious about Pennsylvania, and in particular Philadelphia, because I spent 10 years as a photo editor and sports editor and columnist at the Philadelphia Daily News. And I still have some visceral connection to Philadelphia. And when the votes came in and validating the campaign to just go out and vote, and people went out and voted in record numbers, and when the Philadelphia numbers came in, it seemed to agitate members of our government, and please members of the opposite party.
Here we are about 3 weeks later, give or take, from election night. We do have a president-elect now, Vice President Joe Biden, former vice president, and we kind of know pretty much what the numbers ended up being in each state. But if you would go to the day before the election, clearly, even though he did not win, President Trump, you'd have to say he overperformed what people thought he was going to do, even in this pandemic. Were you surprised by that?
I guess I was, but, Biden is a 6 million vote distance from Trump in terms of the popular vote, but I was surprised in a nice way about Georgia because I had contributed some money to Stacey Abrams. There are always surprises, and it can be nerve-wracking depending on what side you're on and the side that worships Trump felt somehow that their God had been done wrong.
Georgia and Arizona became, I think, the most unique stories of this election. Two decades, and in some cases in Georgia, more than two decades since a Democrat had won there. What happened in those two states, in your opinion?
Well, in Georgia, I give most credit to Tracy Abrams, the activist who apparently had an election stolen from her and galvanized people all over the country against voter suppression. I mean, what's been going on started with voter suppression, which is hardly a new function of government, and went on to other points of trying to indicate that everything in the news media and everything in the election is fraudulent, and a lot of people who don't have time to examine events went along with it, and apparently still going along with it. I have a Trumper right next door to me.
Arizona, what happened in Barry Goldwater, John McCain country?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I think that in a way, Trump's trumping of John McCain, calling him in effect a loser because he became a prisoner of war, that got a lot of John McCain people to turn their votes into Democrats. I don't know all of the situations there and how many more people came out to vote than had before, but obviously the national call to vote, whether it was on the backs of NBA basketball players, or in the wake of some of those killings of black men that caused an outflow and an overflow of emotion and so on. So it went, and I don't know. Again, Arizona is has a lot of Mexican Americans, and I don't think anybody was completely surprised, because Arizona's never been a serious player nationally in this kind of way, but it was certainly an indicator on election night that there were going to be a few changes.
It's never fun to have a candidate that you support lose. Of course, that's the people who supported Hillary Clinton back in 2016. But the people who support President Trump, and there are a litany of different types of people, your next-door neighbor, he didn't win, yet people flew flags, people put signs in their yard, people had parades for a political candidate, a sitting president. He did overperform what we thought he would do during this pandemic. Have you ever seen anybody follow a political candidate like they follow Donald Trump?
Well, there may have been a few local mayors. I'm sure there have been. When I was a child, the mayor of New York was Fiorello LaGuardia, who was it was during the Great Depression, and he was a tremendous personality who used to read comics on the radio on Sunday mornings. So I'm sure there have been big personalities who run for office and sometime achieve it, and they collect fans. But on a national scale, I think what Trump has done is something else, and it's I think it's a danger to democracy. He cleverly identified all of the cracks in the system and tried to exploit them, like, for example, trying to get doors in some states to change from going from Biden to him. It's has all the appearance of a banana dictatorship coup, in which you have all the forms of democracy, congresses and newspapers and so on, but in reality, you have one man trying to call the shots.
Donald Trump's one-term presidency will end on January 20th, 2021, about 2 months, give or take, from now. I think 2 months from today, a matter of fact. That being said, was the mistake from day one, because I remember when he announced, the New York Post, I think on the front cover, ran a picture of Donald Trump with clown face on. Was the mistake thinking he was not smart and goofy, unlike what you just said, that he cleverly identified those cracks? Is he smart in that way? What is he?
Well, he's one of those guys who, as the saying goes, was born on third base and thinks he hit a triple. And he got into the real estate business through his father, and the laws in real estate are really difficult to pin down, and he came along and was able to finesse the system in many ways through tax avoidance and et cetera, things I don't really understand. And nobody has been able to really stop him from his pattern of, well, if something goes wrong, you kick the can down the road, you delay everything, you don't show up, you encourage your party members and not to do their duty as, you know, in oversight and all kinds of what appear to be minor attempts to poke the system, but ultimately become a way of trying to break the system. And it's a little scary. And we shouldn't have to be going through what we're going through. What are people back there thinking? You have a state that went for Trump. You have some very good government people there. What's their sentiment?
Well, it's very interesting because right after the election, the people who supported President Trump were sure that this election was overturnable and that he won, as he said in public. And now that a few weeks have passed, the pandemic is getting worse, so that's dominating people's lives more, which I think gives them less time to think about the election 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I think they still wish he had won, but I'm starting to see even his most fervent supporters, now they're just ticked. They're not willing to accept that he's leaving on January 20th, but if you ask them about it, they're just ticked. You know, he got it put to him. You know, the other guy's awful, and, you know, what a mistake we made. That seems to be the sentiment from the Trump camp.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how little impact, apparently, the COVID-19 has had on the election. And his dereliction of duty in dealing with it. I mean, in the Bob Woodward book, he admits that he knew how dangerous it was. He just didn't want the public to know, which is an amazing admission in a democratic society. And in the kind of country that I thought I was growing up in, and people apparently didn't hold him to account.
Well, that's the big question: is had knowing what we know now, people who turned out, what the results were, if the pandemic hadn't happened, would he have won?
You know, I think he would have certainly had a much better chance, because with the pandemic, also we had an economic pandemic. So that had to be a factor, and you only have to change a relative few thousand votes in a particular district to turn things upside down because of that, because it has turned our lives upside down. But I'm still a little curious about, you know, maybe people got just tired of the pandemic. But for whatever reason, people put their faith in this New York con artist, as I called him on your show years ago, And when a real threat to the country came about in the form of a virus, he was absent without leave.
Well, and this is important. 4 years ago, and I brought this up a lot recently because of the election. 4 years ago, of course, we all thought Hillary was going to win, and she did not. And Larry came on, I believe it was 2 days, it may have been the next day after that election. And at the end of that interview, I'll never forget it, I said, Larry, sum this up for me in one line. What happened here? And you said, a New York con man conned America. I never forgot that in 4 years. Now, what's the story this time? Larry, what's the line?
Well, I think, although there's much speculation about how Donald Trump will be an influence for years to come, in or out of government, I think that in a couple of years, people will have gotten tired of the story, just as they've gotten tired of the virus, and we'll move on. That's what we do. And many of those cracks in the democratic system that can be exploited by someone who doesn't believe that anything should slow him down, much less stop him, maybe they can be repaired legislatively. So maybe in the end he will have done us a favor by identifying all those cracks and allowing us to move back into a real democracy that we're proud of and that the world looked toward.
We're in a very unique situation. On President's Day, every year, we get a list from many periodicals ranking the greatest, the best from the worst, the best to the worst presidents of all time. Now, usually, the presidents who were on the bottom of this list were either one-term presidents, or there are some two-term presidents that really did very poorly. Now, somebody in the know, who is an author of history and scholar of history, told me that more books will be written about the Trump presidency than were written about Lincoln's presidency because of the unorthodox nature of it. Do you buy into that? Where does he rank on the lists?
Well, I'm not a list guy. Even in sports, I don't make lists. I know there are artificial ways of trying to present reality. There were some pretty pedestrian presidents along the way, and it was bound to happen. But in the new age of communications and the social media and all of that, came along a guy who could exploit all the weaknesses in the system. I don't know exactly how it will, and nobody of a lot of greater substance than me actually knows where it's going. But when you look back, we've started to do the job of regulation of social media, whether it's self-regulation or government regulation, which I think will come, because there are a lot of people who on the social media who enjoy yelling fire in a crowded theater. It gets them attention, but it's dangerous to democracy. And if radio and television and other forms of communication can and have been regulated, I don't see any reason why social media won't have to have some standards as well. I'm not talking about left or right in the political spectrum, but some way of stopping people from yelling fire in a crowded theater.
This brings up an interesting point. And of course, we just finished an election, but they come quick. In the election of 2024, you know, there's a lot of talk right now. You know, Trump might run again. Highly unlikely. He'd be 78. He might have some legal troubles coming up here. So, 2028, there's going to be a Republican nominee. Now, because of the way this country is set up, with the blue wall being rebuilt of Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Democratic territory typically, and now Arizona and Georgia being blue states for now, who knows in 2024, does the Republican candidate have to be like Donald Trump? Do you have to be an entertainer more than just espouse the Republican beliefs to win?
Well, it's always good if you've got another dimension to you. I'm not opposed to entertainers, but except when the entertainment seems to be that you're corrupting our system and being proud of it and going at it and so on. So, I don't know. I think the real question is whether the country is so divided that even if Donald Trump were to go into seclusion in his Florida empire and never get involved in politics again, although that's unlikely, I just wonder if you're going to have rabble-rousers who can galvanize the kinds of feelings that people had for Trump. Specifically, I'm thinking of that congressman in Northern Ohio. What is his name?
Portman?
No.
Oh, Jim Jordan.
Yes.
He's in our district. He's our congressman here.
Okay, well, he's got the kind of energy and self-belief that if he decided, or someone like him decided to run for higher office, maybe the easiest thing if you're in the conservative end of the spectrum is to try to find the Trump supporters, to appeal to the Trump supporters, to make it us versus them, and maybe, or hopefully, Donald Trump is a one-off, and political parties will not look to emulate him.
With about 10 minutes left in this interview, this point, I think, needs to be made, that we've been on now for about 30 minutes, and we're talking about the man who lost the election, not the man, which I think is symptomatic of the election itself. So said every pundit, pretty much, that Joe Biden, you know, the Democrat could have been Donald Duck. It didn't matter. This was about, do you like Trump or do you dislike how Trump is running the country? All that being said, because of that, what kind of president is Joe Biden? That's what we're going to get January 20th.
I'm not sure. He's always been a centrist Democrat. to be very likable. He might just be the right guy at the right time to change a course direction in our politics. You know, when an election comes, the other side, whoever the other side is always going to try to find the squeaks and holes and yell about the dangers of what the other guys are doing and so on and so forth. So it's undoubtable that guys will come along and try to cash in on that. But, you know, at the end of the day, our system seems to be working. The courts have rejected the Trump assertions of fraud, which incidentally are never in the actual charges that they make because nobody's been able to find widespread fraud. So I'm a cockeyed optimist who thinks the system, however flawed, will be restored. It was Winston Churchill who famously said, "Democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others."
It's been interesting since Election Day that we've talked about fraud. We've talked about sitting president not conceding. That's really never happened before. We now have the oldest president ever elected. I believe he turned 78 today. That's happened. We've had older presidents. We break that. Trump broke that that record last time he won, or the first time he won. All that being said, a story we're not hearing a whole lot about is somebody from your neck of the woods, Kamala Harris, first woman ever to be vice president or president on January 20th. Is this a really big deal?
It conceivably could be. Most vice presidents disappear into the ether. But, you know, she's an extraordinary woman. You know, actually, I didn't think she could pull this off during the run up to the election. I know she's accomplished and really smart, but somehow there was something about her personality that I thought this is not going to be a good thing, and she exceeded my expectations, and I'm very impressed with her. She knows her situation as a vice president. And I'll be curious to see what assignment she gets from Biden once we get to January 20th.
We've talked about what the Republicans might do in 2024, and they'll be gearing up January 20th, but so will the Democrats, because I'm not saying that Joe Biden won't run again, but he would be 82. He would be 86 when he finished up his second term. That might be a little much. So, Kamala Harris becomes a big deal in 2024, but for what you just said, the people who still don't like her and the people who've come around to liking her feel she's got that personality that they don't like. Can she be the Democratic presidential nominee in 2024, and we don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, could she be the one with who she is now, or does she have to evolve or accomplish something?
Well, it's hard for a vice president to, quote, accomplish something, but if she's in on stage as a important figure for 4 years or 8 years, she certainly is going to be, has has a chance to be a president, a strong presidential candidate. You know, we haven't discussed the racial side of our election, which is still playing out as Trump and his acolytes try to get votes in big cities where there are a lot of black people and brown people overturned. And there is still a strong emotional thing about our society, white people in our society trying to hold on to power, hold on to being the central force in the country. And I don't know how that will play into what she is and does and projects, but she certainly is going to be a strong candidate, assuming that that Biden can work his relatively quiet magic to lower the temperature on the political scene.
Joe Biden will be sworn in 61 days from today, January 20th, 2021. Now, in the next 61 days, the lawsuits are there, as of yesterday, and Rudy Giuliani. Will there ever be a concession? The electors meet in mid-December. Does that cause a concession? Do the lawsuits stop? Does he attend the inauguration? What happens in the next 60 days?
Well, maybe he'll have his own inaugural.
Separate. Dueling.
Separate inaugural. Maybe before the official one. You know, we have a president who calls our people in the military suckers and losers. He needs to win because losing is like death to him. And he's going to hold on for as long as he can, but we already are seeing cracks in the Republican Party about their responsibility and duties in the transition and so on. And I think there will ultimately be a group of Republicans who go up to Trump or try to go up to Trump and say, enough is enough. You lost.
Does he walk out to the chopper and take the ceremonial last trip around D.C. and go down to Mar-a-Lago on January 20th, or does he have to be carried out? Losing is death to him, as you say.
I don't know what exit he will take. I wonder if his heart can stand up for the next 2 months. But whatever way he goes, he'll try to make it dramatic. Joe Biden will become the president, and in a few months after that, everybody will have put away the memories of this election.
We have not seen any violence that we thought we might see after Election Day, although I think a lot of people think the election's still going on. Does that happen when he's...
Well, it's a danger. Where I live, which is in the bluest part of the bluest state, there are many shopkeepers who have just started to pull down the boarding that they that they built because of the fear of some kind of violence and looting and so forth. But I don't know. I think we'll be prepared. I think, you know, 4 years ago, our best people, CIA, FBI, whoever, were able to say with full confidence that there were outside forces from abroad that were trying to influence our election. And they went to work and worked really hard, and there was no apparent outside forces trying to steer this or steal this election. So I'm kind of confident that life will go on. Joe Biden will not be as electrifying as Trump. He won't be tweeting every day. He won't be viewing the world through his own prism and telling you what he thinks rather than what he knows. And life will go on. That's the best we can hope for, and whether these militia characters try to take advantage of a particular situation where they can make a statement of some kind, I don't know. But I feel strongly that that our government will root that out as best as possible, and that we'll have some return to normalcy.
The time always goes too fast, and anybody listening in the listening audience knows that right now. Legendary journalist, HBO boxing analyst, sports commentator, all-around good guy, one of the best, with a big birthday coming up in February, the legendary Larry Merchant. Larry, God bless you. You're just one of my favorite guests, and keep on coming back. We love hearing from you.
Thank you, Scott.
Happy holidays.
And back at you. Bye-bye.
The legendary Larry Merchant. All right. I'll be back on tonight, but that wraps up today's programming. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Hey, Kitchen Today, talking to Scott Spears in Ohio.
David Hartman.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's a real pleasure. I'm glad we finally made it happen, and I look forward to coming back and being with you and your